You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the playoffs. It's the Massive Report playoff edition. Hopefully not our final one. We'll find out this Saturday at Moffray Stadium at 3 o'clock as your Columbus Crew host New York Red Bulls, our old friends, in the playoffs. Stick around to the end, because not only are we going to, with Ori, review the PS5 FIFA new edition, but we're also going to introduce a new international competition called the Micro World Cup, which we just invented like 5 minutes ago, and it's the best idea I've ever had, and Alex is beside himself. He's so excited. Alex is here. Ori is here. Murph is here. My name is Brian, and welcome to another edition of the Massive Report podcast. Murph, let's just get this out of the way at the top so that we can all just relax, discuss the matters at hand of possible injuries, matchups, our picks, the PS5, the Micro World Cup. Let's get the rant out of the way. First, I've never seen you so fired up on our chat. And something that's affected my life recently and came as quite a shock when I tried to watch the Crew the other day and discovered that they had been erased from Hulu. And I was confused. I'm a confused old man. So I was flailing about and asking my wife to please fix it on the remote or do something. Talk into your phone and make it happen so I could watch the game. Nothing worked. What's going on here? Why can't I watch the playoff game on Saturday? Or can I?
Well, you can definitely watch the playoff game because now we're switched to national television.
But, oh, we are?
Yeah.
Who's showing it?
You'll be able to watch the playoffs on Unimas or whatever Spanish TV.
I don't have that either.
But you can watch it on MLSsoccer.com in English.
Now, wait. Alex, they're going to black us out, aren't they?
Nope. You're good for this.
No, I thought maybe Alex would have some sort of conspiracy theory about it.
He may.
So I could go to the website and watch the game there.
Yes, you will be able to watch every Crew playoff game. My issue comes with the people who have recently. Well, all right. Let's for those who are not affected by this or who have not been on Crew Twitter recently and seen everything that's been complained about. So the people who have cut the cord, which is a lot of Crew fans, I imagine, especially the younger demographic,
like me,
Brian, those who have gotten YouTube TV or Hulu, I believe, are the two that have primarily been affected. No longer have, or those providers could not reach an agreement with Sinclair. And there's a whole bunch of political stuff, I guess, going on with Sinclair, but that's neither here nor there for this conversation. What this has directly affected Crew fans is because Fox Sports Ohio, which broadcasts the Crew games locally, falls under the Sinclair umbrella. And so I believe YouTube TV first and then Hulu just recently, Brian, when you discovered it, no longer had that, and fans were obviously disappointed. That is unfortunate. What my issue is mm-hmm. that this has become an attack on the Crew as opposed to where the real issue lies. So the way this works, the Crew have a TV deal, and the TV deal is actually a pretty good TV deal. You've been a long
It's better than what we had before.
That's what I was just going to say. If you've been a long-standing Crew fan, you have suffered through no TV deals. You've suffered through bad TV deals. I mean, there's been times when you almost had to go to a bar to watch Crew games because almost no one had the channel. So this TV deal is Fox Sports Ohio, which is the same network that provides you the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Cincinnati Reds, and the Cleveland Indians. So you are grouped in with all of the major professional sports teams in Ohio, other than the NFL, which has their own TV deal, which I'll get to in a second. The issue has become that these people who have cut the cord, and I say these people respectfully, because each person is allowed to choose how they want to watch their television, have now run into the problem where Fox Sports Ohio is not on their network, or not on their streaming service. Now, because of this contract with Fox Sports Ohio, the Crew cannot simply just stream the game elsewhere or provide you with another outlet. Just like with all the other professional sports they do, they have a Fox Sports Go app, I believe is what it's called, and that's where you can watch those games. The issue being you have to log into a cable provider. Remember this. I will come back to that. The other way to watch the Crew is through the way MLS streams the games, which is unlike other leagues that have the NBA package or the NHL package or whatever it may be. The Crew uses ESPN Plus, which I believe some other leagues have started doing as well. Or sorry, MLS uses that. Those are blacked out in Central Ohio, those games. Except, Brian, I believe you were able to watch.
Well, it was weird. The Orlando game I was able to watch with Orlando's feed on ESPN+. I subscribed to that because I love, like, the FA Cup is, like, the best.
Right.
So I subscribed to that. But the last game, I tried it again, got booted out. So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, I think you just got lucky. But the reason okay. The reason for the blackouts there – and this all comes down to contracts, is to get people in Central Ohio that theoretically should have access to Fox Sports Ohio to watch their local broadcast or go to the games, which obviously we're in a time when few people can go to the games. So the people that are now left without broadcast, with the Crew being broadcast on their streaming service, have a few options. If you are comfortable going to a bar, which I am not advocating for, but those options are out there. That's available. The one thing that I think people are forgetting is that Fox Sports Ohio allows you to stream through their app. Now you do have to, as I said, you have to have a cable provider to do that. But Fox Sports Ohio doesn't limit, and this is an intentional thing, doesn't limit the number of people, and if they do, it's a very high number, that can log into one account. They've done this for a variety of to allow people to share this access. Like if they wanted to cut it to just one per household or one per, you know, six per house, you know, they could limit this very easily. You know, a lot of streaming services do that. You can only have X amount. They do not. ESPN Plus does not. You're allowed to use so many amount because they realize that this is a situation that people are in. So I have advocated, and if you follow me on Twitter, I've made this very clear, that call up a friend who you know has cable and ask for their login. It's as simple as that. Now, if you would rather if you would rather just complain on Twitter that you can't watch the Crew, that's fine. I will probably mute you, and you clearly would rather spend your time complaining on the Crew. And there are people out there who I'm sure will know that I'm talking about them, complaining about what's going on with the Crew than actually watching the game. And that is where I have an issue, because this is not a difficult thing. And blaming the Crew and blaming their TV contracts and all of this stuff is ridiculous. You, for whatever reason, and there can be a variety of reasons for this, decided to cut the cord. I know a lot of people did it. I know a lot of people are still doing it. What you did in that is decided to pay for a lesser product. And like any other lesser product, you lose the ability to have certain things. If you go look at cars and you decide to buy a cheaper car than the more expensive car, you do not get the same features in that car. You can apply this to pretty much anything. And if you wanted to cut your cable, and I understand why people did it, because there's a ton of channels that I don't ever watch, you decided to do that to save money. And I completely understand that, but you're going to lose out on certain things.
All right, hold on right there.
All right.
Because I was just out visiting my parents a couple of weeks ago out in the state of Washington, and my dad has DirecTV, Ori, and Fox at DirecTV have been in a dispute. My dad pays a lot of money for his dish for DirecTV, and that was wiped out. The Seattle Fox affiliate was wiped out. So
really?
it's the problem everywhere.
Well,
it's
right,
not man. Just... And it's not just cord cutting. This kind of thing happens
And that is my final point here, is that this, again, is not a Crew problem. For instance,
right,
2 weeks ago, I believe, the Cincinnati Bengals, again, the NFL has a national TV contract. They do not have local feeds for their – if you want to listen to the local broadcast, you have to listen on the radio. They send people across the country. It's more regional, but the NFL did not show the Cincinnati game, the Bengals game, in Ohio because of other games, unless you were in the city of Cincinnati or the you know, region around it. So Bengals fans in Columbus, Cleveland, anywhere else were blacked out. The NBA does the exact same thing as the Crew. If you want to watch the Cavs, you either have to do the Fox Sports channel, Fox Sports Ohio, the Fox Sports app, or be at the game because you are blacked out on the NBA, whatever their streaming service is called. This is not an MLS issue. This is not a Crew issue. This is a sports issue. And if you want to cut the cord, and that's fine if you do, then you're going to run into some of these issues. Now, you do make the point, Brian. This does happen with cable. You see it from time to time. Hey, you know, on the bottom of the screen, you know, this network is in dispute with our cable company, da-da-da-da. I have never once, since living in Ohio since I was 9, run into an issue where I couldn't watch Fox Sports Ohio with the cable companies that I've had. I have always had it. I've always been able to watch the Cavs. I've always had the channel. It's a channel that seems to be readily available. If you want to watch the Crew, there are ways to do it. Bitching about the Crew's TV deal does no one any good. Also, there are plenty of other streaming services, my understanding. I didn't cut the cord that allow you to that allow you to still watch Fox Sports Ohio. So
it seems like you're cable shaming us, Murph.
That's fine.
You are a cable shamer.
Cut the cord all you want. In fact, I would probably do it if I didn't need it for parts of my job. But I also then wouldn't blame the Crew for their TV deal when I couldn't watch the game because of the decision I made.
Well, you know, just because I'm an old fart, there was a time, and I was very little, but there was this famous story about Richard Nixon in the White House wanting to watch the Redskins. And the playoff game was blacked out. And he practically shut down the government over this. The NFL since evolved a bit, but the sports leagues have always been behind realizing that they ought to open things up as much as possible and let people watch the games. You have no idea what it was like back in the day. They blacked out things all the time. And it was ridiculous because they felt, well, if you're not going to go to the game, if it's not sold out, we're not going to show it to you. I mean, that was the thing. It's like, sorry, the game's not sold out. You can't watch the Browns or the Bengals, the Steelers, whoever
you're doing
that
for Bengals games as recently as 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's
the NFL's the worst at this.
Yeah. I mean, they've gotten better. And I have to say that, you know, my daughter goes to Ohio State, so I took advantage of the NFL Sunday ticket student rate. But you can only watch one. I can't share it with any of you guys. Sorry. I'd like to, but it's good to know that we could share the ESPN Plus and the Fox Sports app and so forth. We could figure out. There's a millennial at work at the radio stations like, dude, I could hook you up. I don't know. There's some sort of like shady back alley stuff that he had going on. I don't know. I didn't want to be arrested. So I'm like, no, that's okay. I'll figure it out. But thank you. All right, are we done with this? I mean, Ori and Alex, you didn't get to add anything to that because Murph is so fired up about this.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. I've seen a lot of people recently start to turn their anger towards members of the Crew front office, and I find that kind of amusing. I mean,
It's silly.
YouTube TV is part of Google, which is a $1 trillion company. It's the first $1 trillion company in the history of the world. And they are going up against Sinclair Broadcasting Group, which is a $2 billion organization. The idea that the Columbus Crew front office in Columbus, Ohio, is going to intervene with these two gigantic companies and force them to the negotiating table and force them to work out a deal is complete fantasy. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And it totally sucks. And I feel super bad for YouTube TV people and honestly for Hulu fans even more, because Hulu had that whole Hulu has live sports advertising campaign.
And I was sucked into that, man.
And then they
lost every athlete known to man.
Yeah, and then they lost half of their live sports. And so, you know, I feel super bad for everybody who's kind of caught up in all of this. But, you know, when you look at this problem overall, the Columbus Crew are such small minnows in this huge pond of this negotiation. You know, if the NBA and all these other groups can't kind of force these two back to the negotiating table, it's just not going to happen. I mean,
here's when it's going to happen. All right. You got the NBA starting on December 22nd. When they start, when the NHL starts, whenever that is, January, then they'll do a deal. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, there are no hockey or basketball games right now. Baseball's over for the year. You know, MLS has to take a back seat behind these other organizations.
Right? And you guys know when you have that warning under your TV, if you still have cable, that come up every, you know, late December, where it's like, this channel will not be in your cable provider starting January 1st of whatever the new year is. And then the channel pops up. So they usually eventually come to a negotiation, but I don't really have like a big opinion on this. It's just kind of interesting to hear the perspectives of everybody, to just kind of think about where television is now. I think, as Pat eloquently put it, bitching on Twitter is not going to do anything for you. You have to be proactive in trying to problem solve. But the way television is now, think about where we're at in our era of streaming, binge watching, and whatnot. What's the only thing that's keeping live television afloat? It's really sports, if you think about it. I can get the news in much greater detail on Twitter, on Facebook, and all these different websites, see it online for free. Sure, I can watch the news on some of these streaming services, but at the same time, I can consume news through my phone daily at a higher rate than watching the news on television. Television shows, forget about it. Watch on demand, watch on Netflix, Hulu, that's not driving people to the table. Live sports is what drives people to the table. And sadly, with the way that this cord cutting helps a lot. It saves a lot of money. I can't tell you the amount of conversations I've had with my dad about how expensive cable is and how we need to cut some of these channels. But then when you're a big sport fan and you're like, oh, we're cutting B in sports, I'm going to miss out on watching La Liga or watching Liga, and you want to watch a lot more soccer and whatnot, you know, sometimes you have to pay that extra buck. And it's a shame that this is the situation, but from a business perspective, the cable companies will try and take advantage of this, because if they know that sports is what's selling their product, then of course they're going to try and, you know, nickel and dime at the negotiation table.
Well, and I think the one thing to remember is that the money is still in cable. The ads and things like that are still significantly better on a cable feed than if you try and put them on a streaming service. Now, will that change? Probably, as more people go that way. But right now, I mean, the vast majority of Americans are still subscribing to cable. And so that is where the money is. And until that shifts, cable is going to continue to be a thing. And you're right, Ori. Sports is probably the biggest thing keeping it alive. But like you said, your dad is probably not as in tune to the cord cutting, or my dad, or, you know, any... You know, people are just used to paying for cable, and, you know, a lot of older people have, you know, they're stuck in their ways and they're going to keep doing it because they want to watch their programs when their programs are on TV. And that is why the cable still makes more money for these companies than, and for, and, you know, it's better for advertisers than the streaming services. And I mean, you look at something like ESPN Plus, when they go to, or ESPN's, any of their streaming stuff, when they go to commercials, they show a few commercials and then they go to that ESPN screen. You know, it's not even filling up their time. So
with the same song that you hear every time.
Right. So if, so I like, I mean, that song, you know,
it's catchy.
Again, I fully understand why people cut the cord, but you had to know that there was going, you weren't going to get everything you wanted that way. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it's affected the Crew. I do believe it'll be fixed by next year. So this is probably a mute point anyway, but, you know,
there are other avenues to watch Saturday's game. There are a lot of other ways to figure it out, but complaining about it doesn't help. Be proactive, potentially try and figure something out. It sucks, I know, but there will be ways to watch that Crew Red Bulls game on Saturday.
Find a cable buddy. That's what
find a cable saying. Buddy. Yeah.
Find a cable buddy. You know,
a lot of this reminds me of MoviePass. Do you guys remember MoviePass from like 2 years ago?
MoviePass?
So there was a company called MoviePass. For $9.99, you could get unlimited movie tickets. So you could go to the movie theater back when we could do that without dying. And you could go and you could watch a movie and then you could leave and you could come back the next day and watch another movie. And you could do that every day.
It was great.
$10 a month.
That's awesome.
And
I never heard about that.
Well, and it didn't last long.
Yeah, it didn't. It lasted like a year because the business model sucked and they lost a bunch of money. And so then they tried to put a bunch of restrictions in place and they kind of had to keep rolling back their business model to try to make it a little bit more sustainable. And every time they would roll it back, you know, they would say, oh, well, you can go to a movie, but you can only go to two movies a week. But two movies a week for $10 is still an amazing deal. But people complained on Twitter about it and people were pissed. They were like, but why can't I watch 16 movies a week anymore? What's going on? This is ridiculous. Because they're losing money like crazy. I think some of that might be happening with some of these cord cutting providers. I mean, they're running into the problem where the prices for, you know, the rights for these different things are so expensive that trying to make it work while keeping that price point low is very, very difficult. There's a lot of competition in the cable space already, and they have, you know, a pretty high price point. And trying to go drastically lower than that while still offering sports, it's just difficult. So, you know, I think that's part of what's going on here. But, you know, I hope that people can kind of direct the anger at the right people and not at the Columbus Crew front office, which have no say in the matter.
Well, I think the last thing to point out is that, you know, when you want a product, and we, you know, myself and, you know, a lot of Crew fans, I think, have grown up in this age where the product that you want is readily available quickly and oftentimes for free. And that is like streaming music. And even before when it was, you were downloading music and, you know, as a kid, I didn't think of it as illegal, but technically it was illegal to download music. And I'm not saying I did that, but I know people that did. And there's just been this easy access to stuff. And, you know, you see it and to tie it into journalism and what I do, you know, there's this idea that you should get the newspaper or the news for free and whatnot. But if in reality, you know, your parents paid for the newspaper, you know, it was delivered because they paid a fee and it was a small fee, but that, you know, this idea that you should just get the Crew for free, or, you know, I use quotation marks on free because obviously you're paying for your streaming service, your cable, whatever, is a little ridiculous. This is a product that they put out and, you know, when you go to the game, you pay for it. To watch it on TV, you also pay for it. So, you know, the idea that it should just be available to you is a little ridiculous to me. Rant over.
Well, I'll just kind of put a bow on this. I just remember being a kid and being such a huge fan of the Seattle Supersonics. Remember the Seattle Supersonics?
Oh, yeah, that team.
I loved the Seattle Supersonics when I was a kid. And
Gary Payton.
They were on TV maybe once a week, and it was always a road game, never a home game. But I watched some epic battles, and they go to LA or Golden State or Phoenix. But it would be generally on a Friday or a Saturday night on one of the over-the-air channels. I don't remember which one. An affiliate in Seattle, they would do it themselves, and it was once a week, and that was it. And if you wanted to follow a team, otherwise you had to listen on the radio. So, I mean, this whole world of, you know, I can go on ESPN Plus. I watched an FA Cup match the other day with Oxford City, and I forget who the other club was.
I think it was Northampton Town.
Northampton Town. Oxford City is like in the National League, like the sixth division, and won the game. I love the FA Cup so much. I pay $5 a month so I can watch like one or two FA Cup matches a week during the winter. And to me, that's worth it. So you have to figure out your own price on this stuff. But just the fact that you have access to all this great content, it's like it's so like specific to you. So, yeah, figure it out. It'll be okay. We got bigger problems in this country than to rant about whether it's going to be hard for you to watch the Crew game or not. You'll figure it out. We've given you the tools here. And I thank you guys for doing that. You guys know more than me, certainly. All right, let's drill into the playoff game. I'm more concerned about the Crew than I am about the Red Bulls. Health is something that we talk about every week. And Ori, first off, was, if you'll remember, the Atlanta game, Artur was hobbled, and he carried on. Eventually, he had to leave the match, and we were wondering aloud where he is. Where is he?
He's fine. Caleb Porter talked to us today at the time of recording on this Tuesday. Caleb Porter said that Artur had a sprained ankle after that decision day victory over Atlanta. He will be available for the Red Bulls game on Saturday for the playoffs. So injury-wise, I think everything is just fine for them. They've had a long time to rest. Arlington, Nagby, and Aloy Room and other players we've talked to over the last week and a half have all agreed that this rest, this sort of break has helped them sort of recuperate, regroup, get themselves healthy and amped up for the playoffs. And the only concern in terms of a potential player missing would actually be maybe Luis Diaz, because of the way that the COVID protocol is working out with how long is it, Pat, that you have to quarantine yourself after coming back for MLS rules? In 9 days, you said?
Yeah, the rule as it stands right now is 9 days from when you get back to the country.
Right. And right. Luis Diaz was in Austria playing for Costa Rica against Qatar.
Right.
And Caleb Porter told us today that he is hopeful that Diaz will be available in the playoff game. And you have other teams dealing with this issue. Inter Miami is hoping Rodolfo Pizarro will be available for their Friday game against Nashville.
You know, fellas, Ori, Murph, Alex, anyone could speak to this. I can't. Why can't the Crew, especially when it's a friendly, Costa Rica, Qatar, right? Wasn't that what it was?
Yeah, Costa Rica, Qatar, in Austria.
Why can't they just say, no, you can't go?
I mean, theoretically, I think they could ask. I mean, it is technically an international window, but for a friendly, I believe you can still say no. And I believe, and don't quote me on this, but there was a report out there that Harrison Offal got called into the Ghana camp for their games. And I would have to imagine that if you're calling in Harrison Offal, you might as well call in his buddy Jonathan Mensah, who has played lights out this year.
Oh, my God. No.
So I wonder if – and Caleb Porter was asked about this last week, if they turned down any guys and kind of dodged answering the question and focused on the Luis Diaz thing. But right. It would not surprise me if they had asked Harrison Offal and Jonathan Mensah, hey, we know you guys got called in, but we've got the playoffs and we're going to need you here. With Luis Diaz, obviously you have other options, you know, a comparable level options. Whereas if you lose Jonathan Mensah, you're playing Cada and Williams. And if you lose Harrison Offal, you're playing Chris Cadden, who's hardly played this year. So it would not surprise me, and I don't know this for sure, but there was the report about Offal, if they had asked that of at least one, maybe more guys. Obviously, the MLS Americans weren't called in intentionally, so you weren't worried about Giassi Zardes. But, yeah, I think they were probably more willing to risk not having Luis Diaz because they knew, you know, Derek Etienne can step in there and do a similar job or something.
So he should feel bad about himself then, since he was allowed to go. Yeah. Ori, are there any other knocks that we should be concerned about? There's been so many this year.
Nothing that pops into my head. I did want to note that Ghana did actually play competitive matches over this international window. African teams are currently trying to qualify for the Africa Cup of Nations, which is their continental competition.
It's a great tournament.
It is a very entertaining tournament, yeah. And Ghana actually did lose to Sudan today, 1-0, but they are still first place in their group and would clinch automatic qualification. Okay. Ghana obviously being one of the powerhouses of the African Federation, definitely a favorite for that tournament next summer. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the Crew, everybody is looking healthy. They're excited. They're amped up. You've got guys that, you know, did well in the MLS awards. We'll see what the other awards come out over the week. Obviously Lucas Villarreal, newcomer of the year, which
excellent.
Interesting considering the fact that Robert Berich of the Chicago Fire almost single-handedly took that team into the playoffs. I think if the Fire make the playoffs, it's possible that he actually wins that award. But obviously, Lucas Zelrayon's impact has been incredible for that team, and we'll get into more of him and all the other players when we really preview this match. But also, Aloy Room, third in goalkeeper of the year, and then Caleb Porter finished fifth in coach of the year voting. So we'll see what the best 11 comes out as and other awards too. But Everybody's healthy and ready to go. This is the healthiest this team has been since the start of MLS's back.
And I think that's important because, you know, Caleb Porter talked today about how he felt like against the Union, the Crew were kind of in fifth or fourth gear. And then against Atlanta, they were, you know, he felt they were a little better. They were in fifth gear. And he feels after these 2 weeks of practice and, you know, getting guys fully fit, you saw Giassi Zardes and Lucas Zelarayan each score. Aloy Room has played well, making some big saves. He feels like there's that next gear that they can hit that they were basically playing in at the beginning of the season. And, you know, this is the time of year where you want to be in that high gear, right? And I also think the getting into that rhythm of playing roughly once a week with, you know, your normal recovery time, preparation, you know, for those who have never, you know, that didn't play soccer regularly or haven't followed how the Crew do it, you know, if there's a Saturday game, Sunday, usually the guys who didn't take part at all go out and train. Monday is a recovery day, so the players are at the facility, but they're receiving treatment. The guys that played in the game played heavy minutes in the game while the rest of the team practices. And then Tuesday's when you kind of get back on the field, get going again, and that's when you start to kind of put in what you're going to do tactically for the game. And really Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is when you really dive deeper into that. So there has not been a lot of that this year. You know, going back all the way to the beginning of the season with between the New York City FC game on March 1st and the Seattle Sounders game on March 7th, that was really the only window that they had that was any sort of normal. I believe there was a week and a half, 2 weeks, one of those between phases. But at that point, they didn't, I don't believe, had a game to prepare for where they knew the opponent. So having this where you can sit down, you can go through your normal routine, and you can game plan for an opponent, I think really benefits this team, benefits every team in MLS, frankly, but will help the Crew with the way that they want to play and whatnot.
So because of COVID, though, have there been any interruptions in training schedule, anything that we should be aware of, or have they been able to get locked into that old school schedule of, of years before this year?
They've been good from everything we understand in terms of their schedule. And Caleb Porter and Darlington Nagbe talked about it too, that, you know, it's kind of been a breath of fresh air to get back to that. And, you know, I did ask Darlington about, you know, with obviously cases rising today, and the press conference we had with them was at the same time that Governor Mike DeWine was announcing curfew. And so, you know, I asked Darlington, and I'm going to ask some of the other guys when we talk to them later this week, about what they're doing to ensure, you know, guys are doing what they're supposed to, because A, you don't want to lose anyone during the playoffs, obviously, and you don't want to have to miss a game. But also, you know, as much as we think about this and whatnot, it becomes very easy to relax and, you know, okay, we've been doing this. And then you decide to go out to dinner one night or, you know, something like that, where, you know, you catch it and give it to the team and now you have a whole problem. So it seems to me like this is the time of year where you need to really remind these guys regularly, hey, let's be diligent. You know, we've got a few weeks left of this. If we make a run to MLS Cup, this is the time of year where we really need, especially with everything going on in the state, really need to be careful about what we're doing outside of training. And Darlington Nagbe said that they are, and that they've been so throughout the season. So I think that's good to hear, and hopefully everyone stays healthy from that side of things and from the injury standpoint throughout the playoffs.
Well, Alex, in that decision day match against Atlanta, we got ZZ Top back, the band back together. We got Room back between the pipes, looking good down the stretch. Because you're the guy that sees the storm clouds on the horizon, like this past Sunday, you know, you see what's coming before the rest of us. What sort of doom and gloom are you seeing that the rest of us are not seeing about this playoff game on Saturday against Red Bulls?
Yeah, I think that this is a good – we're playing a good team. But I think now that we're back and we're fully fit and it's the playoff season, I think that the guys are going to be amped up and ready to go. So I'm not super concerned about it. You know, as always, Don Garber will try to fix the match against the Crew, as he's done in every.
I did not set you up for that.
Since the team was announced, but you know, all things considered, I think it's winnable. I'm not super worried about it. I'm excited that we've got the guys back. You know, there is this question around: have they had enough time together recently to kind of all be on the same page? I think the team's looked inconsistent over the last few weeks, but I think it's a winnable match, so I'm optimistic.
And one thing I want to point out before we move on is look at how the Crew have played sort of in those restart matches. Opening day, March 1st, a good performance against New York City. Granted, they played against 10 men for 88,000 minutes, but they possessed well. They won the game. MLS is back. Thrashed FC Cincinnati in Florida. Played fantastic. MLS regular season restart in August. They go and play the Chicago Fire at home in front of nobody. 3-0 performance. Maybe their best performance at Montfrey Stadium from minute 1 to minute 90 that we saw all season. So this team does well when it has time to rest, when they're fully healthy, and we have the proof that they can do that. So we'll see if that happens again against the Red Bulls, and being at home is certainly going to help.
Murph, does when you guys talk to Caleb about this match specifically, and maybe any match, is he given to singling out particular opposing players that he's concerned about, or can you kind of read into what he's saying about how he plans to especially defend against any particular team? Where do you see his concerns if you're in his head right now?
No particular players, but we did talk a lot both today and last week about the way the Red Bulls play. And, you know, they're a tricky team with, and we've talked about this before, with the way they press. And, you know, he said today that the time that they're most dangerous, and this is a strange thing, is right when they turn the ball back over. So when the Crew win the ball from the Red Bulls, because they bring so many guys to pressure the ball right away to try and win it back, because they think that's a good way to get the ball and counter when you're out of position. And it works. I mean, you know, the proof has been in the pudding. They've been one of the better teams in the last 10 years or so in MLS, at least in the regular season. So that is the danger and the concern. Now, the Crew have handled that relatively pretty well, you know, combating that with the way they play. They've been willing to adjust to, you know, sometimes you just got to clear the ball type of thing, especially in your own defensive third. So I think that's where, you know, you kind of look not specifically at players, but that matchup of the two combating styles of, you know, you want to possess and you want to build out of the back, but you've got to be aware that that Red Bull pressure is going to come and you've got to either switch it to another part of the field where you're going to have space, or, you know, just get it out of your own defensive third and, you know, kind of live to fight another day. So I think that is the tactical matchup that'll be very interesting to watch in this game, is how both sides handle each other.
Well, and Ori, they know each other so well. I mean, can you imagine any sort of surprises tactically?
Potentially not, just because both teams kind of play, you know, their tactical style nearly every game. We have seen Columbus adapt, and Caleb Porter has said in, you know, many of the occasion that the team has had to adapt. Every game is different tactically and whatnot. But it's just very interesting to hear a team that is most deadly after they lose possession. And that comes back from something that I was taught as a kid when I played soccer. You got to pretend the ball is your favorite toy, and you don't want anybody else playing with that toy. You want that ball. And with the Red Bulls mentality, that's kind of their mentality. And when you have that high press, it'll be interesting to see if the potential exploit would be, well, New York is using a lot of energy when they're not in possession. They're using a lot of energy to win possession back. Whereas when they're in possession, maybe they don't use as much energy. So whether or not Columbus can do quick transitions, switch the field of play, run down the wings and find that space, that's where they're going to be able to get the Red Bulls off their game. And in that game against in that game in Florida at MLS is back, we saw New York actually be the better team for about the first 10, 15 minutes or so. And then Zelrayan came in, you know, got a good shot from outside the box. And that might also be the key with how quick the pressing is. You know, you have to be composed on the passes. You got to be quick as well. Make those good decisions. Mental decisions are going to be really important in this game, especially from a Columbus perspective. And taking those outside shots, you know, whether Pedro Santos and Zelrayan lets them loose. Or if you see Luis Diaz start and he shoots like he usually likes to do. So that could potentially be the difference in this game. But it's not going to be easy for the Crew.
Well, Alex, all things being equal, I think the talent balances toward the Crew, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, we have a lot of teams beat on paper, to be totally honest with you. I think if you look at the Crew's lineup and you put them against basically anybody in the league, we're on par with the very best in the league. The only question in my mind is, you know, we have a lot of guys who are just now kind of getting back from injury. Some of these guys were out for quite some time. How well are they playing with each other? You know, how well are they feeling mentally, you know, after that long of a break? Last few performances have been kind of, you know, they've had their ups and downs. But it's better to have those guys back, even though they were out earlier, than to not have them back at all. So hopefully we will see a different Crew team than we've seen in recent weeks.
Murph, do you see any surprises in the starting 11 on Saturday that we haven't thought of, or is it going to be pretty easy to fill in the blanks?
I think it'll be pretty straightforward. You know, I think when this team has its best, has everyone available, the best lineup is almost picks itself. I think the wingers are, you know, there's, like we talked about with Luis Diaz, there's a little bit of interchange there. So there's certainly some question about who starts there. But, you know, from the back line, I think is, you know, the same four, ideally. Magny and Artur in the central midfield with Zelrayan in the playmaker role. And then, you know, Pedro Santos is most likely to start on the left, but who plays on that right wing with Zardes up top? I think that's really the only question, you know, especially against a Red Bulls team that I don't think you're going to, even if you tried to spring a surprise on them, you know, the way they play, it's not going to affect them too much. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do. So, you know, if Caleb has a backup plan in his you know, catalog to pull out, I don't think this would be the game to really do it. I think you'd rather go with the guys that you know can play out of those tough situations and have battled with the Red Bulls previously.
So I've got a question. So we were talking earlier about, you know, the fact that hopefully everybody stays healthy with, you know, coronavirus going around and everything like that. Do we know what happens during the playoffs if there is an outbreak, whether it's on the Crew or another team? During the regular season, we would kind of delay those matches and just pick them up later on. But when you're kind of in a playoff format, that obviously gets a little bit more difficult, a little bit more complicated. Has the league released any sort of guidance around what the plan is if that happens?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything. No. You know, it's a good question, because while you do have more time between games, if you have a major outbreak, you can't just cancel a playoff game. I mean, I guess one team could forfeit, but you're not pushing it back, 2 weeks. There's just, unless they want to push the whole playoffs back, you know, MLS Cup is scheduled for, I think, December 12th. I guess you could move things back if it became dire, but no, I haven't seen anything official about what the plan is. Knowing MLS, it wouldn't surprise me if it's, let's hope we get through it, and if we don't, we'll make up something on the fly.
Wait a second. I thought that there was a contingency plan in their back pocket, and if they needed to, they would bring that forth. That's not true?
Yeah,
you're asking a lot of this league.
Yeah, you're just hoping that there's not a situation like Game 6 of the World Series where you find out that Justin Turner had COVID at the end of the eighth inning.
Don't.
And then went out to celebrate. I hope we don't have that.
Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, that I'm hopeful that nothing
will
happen.
Full of crap. That was an outrage, okay? That was handled so poorly. And baseball did, I think, after those initial bumps in the road, did a pretty good job of managing the whole thing. I don't blame anyone for mistakes in this whole thing. People are shaking their fists all the time. But you try to figure this stuff out. But that should never have happened. And God help us if this happens with MLS. And I have to think that they're at least thinking that this could be a possibility. But we'll see. I don't know. All we can do is take it one day at a time, one game at a time. And I'm so excited for this match because, A, it's Red Bulls. Why not? It's playoffs. I mean, we have such a history with them. We know each other so well. And B, we're so healthy. And we really, if you look back at the expanse of this weird season, we haven't been particularly healthy. And I think a lot of clubs could say that. But, you know, it is exciting that – and I think Caleb Porter has done such a great job of managing the injuries through this clustered schedule where creativity and roster depth and imagination are so important. And I really think he deserves a lot of credit for, like, okay, we have to pull back here. You know, we're not going to have our best 11 on the field. We may only get a draw. But in the big picture, I think he's done a great job of funneling this team toward the playoffs. So well, no excuses.
Well, and to that point, you know, it was announced today that Jim Curtin won Coach of the Year, which is no surprise. Great job. They won the Supporters Shield for their first ever trophy. And we're a very fun team to watch, the best team in the league. But I think had the Crew not had as much of a slide as they did, you know, that late season, Caleb Porter finished fifth. That seemed a little low to me, given, yeah, Brian, what you just mentioned. I mean, he had this team playing as well as anyone for the first half of the season, despite the fact that it was all broken up. You know, that you had multiple months off before MLS is back. They came to MLS is back, accomplished what they wanted to do, started the second phase, as Ori mentioned, really well. And, you know, the Philadelphia Union, to be fair, and this, again, isn't to take away from Jim Curtin, that was a pretty healthy team throughout the course of the season. They, you know, they did not battle the same type of injuries, especially to key players, that the Crew did. And so I agree with you. I think Caleb did a great job balancing what he had available, much better than in year one with the Crew, where, you know, obviously more injuries, but, you know, I think he figured it out a bit more, probably had more pieces that he knew what to do, what deal with. But yeah, I think he deserves a lot of credit. I thought he would finish higher than fifth in the voting, but, you know, it is what it is. I think he would take a run to MLS Cup over a, you know, Coach of the Year trophy. And that is obviously the focus now.
Absolutely. So, just again, I'm more focused on us than I am Red Bulls. If you guys have any thoughts, I'll start with Dory. Is there anybody on the Red Bulls roster where you think if blank or we can't let blank beat us? Is there anybody that jumps out?
There's no one in particular, especially, you know, one of the most prolific players in Red Bulls history, Bradley Wright Phillips, you know, just going to LAFC this season. Actually won comeback player of the year, I'm pretty sure, for 2020.
Of course.
Had some good big goals for LAFC, but this is a very – it's a united team. There isn't like a singular absolute superstar for the New York Red Bulls. I think defensively they have some very strong pieces in the likes of Aaron Long and – Kyle Duncan. I think they've had very good seasons. I think I mentioned them on the last podcast, but we'll see if maybe Daniel Royer plays. I don't know if he came on as a sub in their decision day win over Toronto in the 63rd minute. So we'll see whether or not he starts in the game. He's probably the guy you're going to look to as potentially their big goal scorer. He scored some big goals for them in previous playoff years. I think against Columbus, he scored against the Crew 2 years ago in 2018. So there isn't that one player. It's not like, you know, if Columbus was playing Toronto, you'd single out Alejandro Pozuelo. If Columbus was playing, you know, a team like Miami, you would single out Gonzalo Higuain and Blaise Matuidi. New York doesn't have that central superstar. They're very good as a unit, and they started off the season pretty shaky, but they ended off very strongly. And for them to come back from a Derby Day loss to New York City in their own backyard 5-2 and beat Toronto to get the sixth seed, that shows a lot of character for sure. And they've only lost one game since October the 10th, which was that one loss to New York City. So this is a true team effort. And an extra time game is very possible with the way that these two teams play.
Murph, they've used two goalkeepers this season. And I haven't been following the Red Bulls that closely. Is that an injury thing? Is one in your mind better than the other, Mura and Jansen?
I'm honestly not sure why they used both. Mura is the one that stands out to me, played more games. He's the name I recognize. I'm unsure why they use both, to be entirely honest with you.
Yeah, it's kind of an even split. So.
Yeah, 13 games to 11 games. One of Johnson's games was off the bench, so I wonder if that is the injury potentially that
okay.
got him into the game. All but right. Mira played the last 7 or 8 games of the season, so he's the guy I would imagine that would be in for them in the playoffs. But I agree with Ori. I think that this is a very, you know, team-oriented group. You know, we talked before the Crew played them at the beginning of the season about how they were going through a transition period. And, you know, there were guys like Wright Phillips and some names that we saw on this team for a long time that, you know, aren't there anymore. And they kind of turned to their academy and, you know, some lesser known players. Brian White was their leading scorer this year. He had 5 goals. So, you know, it's not like there was one guy that stood out in the goal scoring department. A good player, a good younger player. Kaku is another name I'll bring up, the midfielder, and he's kind of their creative piece. Only 5 assists this year, which I look at that, and that's I assumed just from watching them play that would have been a higher number, but 3 game-winning assists. He also scored 2 goals. He's a guy who can be dangerous coming out of the midfield.
Well, so I think to kind of put an overarching cover on this is that we know what they're going to do regardless of who they do it with, right? I mean, that's that they yeah. play their style, and so you know exactly what to be ready for, which is kind of comforting, I guess.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's going to be a battle. It's certainly going to be a battle.
Absolutely, and the weather's going to be perfect. We're going to be in the lower 60s on Saturday afternoon.
Thank God.
We don't have to think about snow or last Sunday's weather, which was interesting. So none of that will be part of the conversation. We'll make our picks in a few moments, but we have a few other matters to get to before we wrap things up with the Bassett Report, including the kids. The U.S. men's national team, I haven't been feeling particularly good about them for the last couple of years now, but I was excited by what I saw. And granted, it was Panama, not the most talented club you're gonna play against, but these young kids that our own Greg Berhalter ran out there. What were you guys excited about? We'll just go around the room. I'll start with you, Alex.
Yeah, excited that we have people who can fill in for some of these older, aging, terrible U.S. national team players who are just like kicking around our system, and everybody who used to love them now hates their guts because they're still getting called up, even though they're now terrible.
Are you willing to name Michael Bradley?
No, I'm not going to name any names. Michael Bradley. Yeah. So I'm happy that we have some people who we can call up instead and make a legitimate case for, like, hey, this is a better use of this friendly or this stupid qualifying game. We can give this young person who may be good in the future experience instead of giving a whiny, old, past it player more experience that they don't need or deserve in a match. So, yeah, my hope is that what we're seeing is kind of the passing of the torch, and that all of these young kids getting called up during this, you know, weird time that we're all living through, hopefully these call-ups will continue and then we won't kind of regress to leaning on, you know, Michael Bradley or Chris Wondolowski or whoever the heck fans want because they were good, you know, 7 years ago.
Ori,
that's my hope.
Okay, Ori, I'm going to hold my tongue to see if you're excited about the same player that I am. Who jumped out to you more than anyone else?
Well, I wrote 4 names down, but the name that a lot of people are talking about, this player who played 2 games for the United States and everybody around the U.S. men's national team circle on Twitter and online want this guy secured for the Stars and Stripes, Yunus Musa. He played very well in the 2 friendlies. He was one of the standout performers. He's playing for Valencia over in La Liga, so he's, you know, the fact that we've got all these young American kids playing for big clubs in Europe is really interesting. And, you know, it's whether or not people want to have these guys play in MLS or play in Europe, that's a different discussion, but it brings the point that this team is a lot deeper. I mean, we've never seen a U.S. team with this kind of young talent playing overseas, as well a midfield that felt confident in possession and, you know, multiple players in all these different spots. But, you know, Musa, born in New York City, played for the youth England teams. What do you say, Brian?
Well, I was just going to ask you, because a lot of people didn't get to watch the match because it was on at such a weird time. What makes you excited about him? And also explain why we may not be able to keep him.
So the reason we might not be able to keep him is he's eligible for the Ghanaian national team and played for youth England teams and was born in New York City. So he's kind of all over the map, and we'll see whether or not
he was born while his mom was like on vacation in New York or something like that.
I think so.
In the U.S. briefly.
Yeah. Because I saw the men in blazers joking around after Germany lost to Spain 6-0, being like, Germany now looking to see if Yunus Musa's mother took a vacation in Germany while she was pregnant, so he's eligible for the German national team.
Yeah. Hey, I think that's the concern, is like, while he was born in the United States, he doesn't necessarily have a ton of ties to the U.S. I think he grew up overseas and whatnot. But so it'll be interesting to see what happens with him for sure. Continue, Ori.
Yeah, I think just a new fresh name. That's kind of what excites me about him. Nothing particular about his play. He does a bunch of stuff very well.
So just for people that don't understand, because this was a friendly, he's dating the U.S. national.
Exactly. Right, he's testing the waters.
Casually dating.
If this game had even been in like the Gold Cup, correct me if I'm wrong, but even if it was the Gold Cup or something, this would be his decision, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah,
anything,
but you also
that
have,
means anything.
Yeah, but you also have like a one-time switch and
it's way more complicated.
There's all these different situations, but
tied to the U.S. right now.
Yeah, okay. But a couple other players that I think are tied to the U.S. are in there. Sebastian Soto, surprise, yes. 2 goals for Panama.
Yeah.
Weston McKennie, who's going to be, I think, the best central midfielder for
the United States. He looked great to me.
Yeah.
He really did.
But the guy that I think who might be potentially the best player on the team when we get to Qatar, even when we get to 2026, is Gio Reyna. Gio Reyna's been impressing me a lot. Fantastic for Dortmund and the United States.
The screen.
Yeah, no Christian Pulisic. You got Gio Reyna in there. He's a fantastic young kid. He's
not to say that there isn't a spot for Pulisic, because obviously
Pulisic is still the best player on the team.
Right, but I was so excited.
No, you don't think
Reyna.
So, Alex?
And Claudia Reyna is his father, which makes me feel old. But he just jumped off the screen to me. For those that aren't aware, he was in NYC's academy, moved on to Borussia, and is in the regular Borussia Dortmund team, and has seen plenty of important minutes with them over the past year or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's been playing Champions League games and whatnot. I'm curious to see, because Alex was sort of shaking his hand there side to side about Pulisic. Who do you spot as the best player on the American team?
So my concern with Pulisic is
from Michael Bradley.
Pulisic has had a lot of injuries in a relatively short period of time. And I am starting to worry that he is not the kind of player that you can build a team around.
Throw that out, though. I mean, injuries are sometimes just nothing but bad luck.
And sometimes it's more than bad luck. And he's had the same kind of recurring injuries now for a while, and it does make me a bit nervous. He's an incredibly talented player, but I am glad that we've got guys like Reyna in the pipeline who can take some of the pressure off. Because, I mean, when we were talking a year ago, you looked at the U.S. national team and it was a bunch of bums and Christian Pulisic. I mean, he was the guy. And we had a bunch of like semi-talented young kids who were kicking around, and we were like, oh yeah, you know. But I mean, we were talking about, you know, was Aaron Johansson going to recover from all these injuries and be, you know, we don't have to worry about guys like that anymore. I mean, we've got talent in the pipeline who can step up, and we're not so dependent on Pulisic. And I'm not sure where he's going to be 5 years from now from an injury standpoint.
I think we're jumping the gun with passing judgment on him. I know, Alex, that you're the hammer when it comes to this kind of thing. But when he's on, I mean, he looks great. And the weird thing about Chelsea last year was they seemed really reluctant to play him. And to your point, maybe it's because they feel he's injury prone. I don't know. But in important matches, when he was fit, he made me proud. I'm sorry. I've never met him. But, you know, as a fellow American, like Yunus Musa, you know, fellow Americans, Yunus and I, Yunus, please, please do the right thing. Just can, play with us.
Can we bribe him? Can we bribe? Are we allowed to bribe?
I don't know how this other, stuff works.
Other like, I'm just saying it would be a very patriotic thing of Nike to do if they were to offer him a conditional sponsorship of, you know, maybe $15 million. If he joined the U.S. national team.
No, you can only do that for a football player and a full ride to Oregon.
Oh, that's we go.
Another.
There we go.
Giacchini, you know, that's a position, and they were talking about it during the telecast, that's an area of great concern with the U.S. men. And he was where he was supposed to be to do his job, and that's pick up the garbage. And I think that's often overlooked with strikers. Did he, and again, another kid, did he show you things that you needed to see?
Yes. Now, again, it's one game and against lesser competition, but, you know, being in the right place at the right time, that second goal he scored, willing to put his head on the line, going up against a defender on kind of a weird header, that's what you need from an American forward. And I mean, frankly, if you think through who the American options are, there's not a ton, you know, as much as we like Giassi Zardes here in Columbus, I'm not sure he's the answer, you know, when you start to get in a serious World Cup qualifying and potentially the World Cup. You know, Jozy Altidore is still capable, but he's part of that older generation that Alex was discussing. And, you know, I mean, there's just Josh Sargent was supposed to be called into this, but because of restrictions where he is in Germany, he couldn't leave. He is a good player, but I think there's still a lot he needs to prove. So, you know, to have options is a good thing. And this goes back to kind of the Pulisic argument is like, well, yeah, if he's injury prone, that's fine, especially if Gio Reyna continues to develop. You know, if you can get him for a World Cup where you have those two, you know, assuming they develop the way we think they're going to, that's a good problem to have. You know, you would then also like to have your striker. You would like to have a few options here. So seeing a young kid, you know, and we'll see what he does from there. But yeah, I liked a lot what I saw from him. I also liked Soto that Ori mentioned earlier, came on and scored two goals in, you know, less than 10 minutes. And an interesting thing that they talked about in the broadcast that I thought was funny. There's a handful of U.S. kids playing in the Netherlands, and they talked about how they get together as much as they can, you know, play FIFA. You know, they said they might have Thanksgiving together here in a couple weeks, you know, things like that. So it's cool to see, even if you're not playing for the same club, but you're in, you know, you're overseas, you're young, you don't know a ton about the country. They've got, you know, some Americans that are forming a chemistry, and Ledesma assisted Richie Ledesma, who played for Real Salt Lake before going over the Netherlands, assisted on both his goals, so on Soto's goals. So some chemistry built off the field that I think then was reflected on the field, which was cool to see.
Yeah. So Giacchini plays in Ligue 2 in France.
Yeah. Ligue 2.
Ligue 2? Okay, I'm sorry.
It was Ligue 2 Uber Eats, because now they're presented by Uber Eats.
Okay, good to know. Is that a good level of competition for him to improve? Are we happy with that?
Yeah, it's a decent level of competition. He's playing for SC Cayenne, who's like a team that's usually, you know, sort of like a Watford or like a West Brom that's always either getting relegated from the top league and then getting promoted from Ligue 2. But it's decent competition. There's a couple of teams in here that have been pretty decent. Of, you know, Auxerre is a very historic club in France. Paris FC is starting to get a lot better. You also have Le Havre and Toulouse. So it's good competition for sure. But there's another forward out there that I think is worth mentioning for a potential spot. Conrad De La Fuente is definitely someone to keep your eye on for the American national team.
And also, where is he playing his club right now?
I believe he's playing in Spain. No, yeah, he's on Barcelona.
Okay, yeah, he's one of Barcelona kids. There's a couple of Barcelona kids. Well, the one thing I think about, you know, playing in the second division in France, I will let Ari do the pronunciation, even though I took multiple years of French.
I don't know that, French.
I think that he's going to get playing time, which is important. You know, has already made 24 appearances since joining the first team just last year. So that's important. It's like the young guys in MLS. It's always that debate of, okay, when do you go overseas and maybe risk not having as much time as opposed to playing in MLS. I still think that's probably a little bit higher level, but you know, he's getting opportunities. He's 20 years old. You want him on the field. And I think, you know, obviously if he does well, I think other clubs will start to take notice. So yeah, I'm not concerned at this point that he's not in one of the top leagues right now. Get your minutes, score your goals, continue to be a factor. And is he a guy who can also play for another national team? I thought they talked about that on the broadcast as well.
Potentially, I'm not sure.
Oh man, we got to get this tied up. So it could be a case where by the time we get to the World Cup,
yeah, he is.
We could qualify.
He can play for Italy and Jamaica.
Oh well, he's not going to play for Jamaica.
That's quite a combination.
Yeah, it is. Italy, I don't know. I don't know where they're sitting right now as far as how good they feel about themselves.
But he's from Missouri, so, you know.
My mom was born in Calgary. I could be eligible for the Canadian national team.
And at one point in the not-so-distant past, they might have called you in, but that's a real team now. So
yeah, Canada is actually pretty good.
That makes me a proud half Canadian. So it could, by the time we get to, and God help us if we don't make the World Cup, Alex, Zach Steffen could be the old man of the U.S. national team by then. I mean, all those other guys are going to be pushed out the door, right?
Yeah, but all those other guys suck, and Zach Steffen does not. And so that is a very, very important difference here. And yeah, he could be kind of a leader on this team. And you know, he's the kind of guy that I think you want in that leadership role, whether it's at the club level or whether it's at the national team level. He really seems like a smart, level-headed guy, passionate about what he does, and very, very good at what he does. So I would be completely comfortable giving him the armband at some point in the future and would welcome that. Honestly.
He had it on at least in the second game. I'm not sure about Wales.
Yeah, captain material, through and through. Absolutely. And I would love to see him kind of end up with that armband on a permanent basis in the near future. So yeah, I think that would be great.
All right, quickly, let's rip through these things that jumped out at me. Spain 6, Germany 0 in the Nations League.
Yogi Love. Right?
I didn't see any of that match. I didn't see any of that match. My jaw hit the floor when I saw that score. Should I be surprised by that?
Definitely a little surprised. This is Germany's worst competitive loss in 89 years. Which is definitely something, but the German
sounds like a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time, you know. But you see the track Germany has kind of been taking, and it's kind of similar to where the United States was at, and I'll get to that as I talk through this. So you see where Germany was at in 2018. Horrible performance in Russia, terrible World Cup. They came in last place in their Nations League group with Holland and France. And they're still well within the range of qualifying for the Nations League finals when they get their final matches in. But, you know, they need to find their – they have some superstars developing. I mean, Goretzka and Joshua Kimmich are fantastic, fantastic players. They've done great for Bayern Munich, who I believe are the best team in Europe right now. But I think it's very similar to the United States. Out with the old, in with the new.
They got old fast. I mean, it wasn't that many years ago that they put that beat down on Brazil, right?
Was 6 years ago. And to me, that is still the most shocking sporting result I've ever witnessed in my entire life. And I don't know what could top that. But, you know, you have some youth in there. Sané, Gnabry, Werner, Goretzka. You still got guys like Toni Kroos playing in the team. I think Ozil is done with Germany. Center back-wise, maybe we'll see Jerome Boateng potentially play. I doubt it, but I think Yogi Love's time is up. They need to find new-blooded management because the way Germany's been playing of late, they're nowhere near close to a favorite for the European Championships. I think Portugal have been fantastic of late. Nations League winners. They've played very well against some of the top teams in Europe. They're better than when they were in 2016 when they won the tournament thanks to great defending and an expanded field. So, and then you have France, Belgium. Some people are talking about England. Germany is not within that conversation. And we saw when Germany hit their rock bottom, which came in 2004 when they missed out on qualifying to the quarterfinals in Euro 2004. They tied Latvia and lost to the Czech Republic in that tournament. They reset the system. They restarted it because they had to host the World Cup 2 years later. They came in third, and then they eventually won the tournament in 2014. And I think we're kind of seeing that with the United States. Miss out of Russia, tear down the system, develop the youth, and we'll see this team develop further. I'm not saying
Hire Greg Berhalter.
So I'm not saying the United States will win the World Cup. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the team is set up to do better in the future, because when you have a massive failure like that for the United States, Germany, whoever, you have to rebuild and rethink your system, because that's international performance is so crucial in world football. It is so important. And well, we saw what happened with France too. 2010 was a disaster. Their team hated each other. You got guys getting kicked out of South Africa 8 years later, world champions.
One thing I want to say before we move completely off the U.S., and I'm assuming most people on this podcast don't have an issue with Greg Berhalter as a head coach, given what he did with the Crew, but there is a lot of that among American soccer fans. And I think that the biggest thing with Greg is, and it was even this way with the Crew, the results don't matter to him as much as the performance until the results need to matter. And we saw that a lot in Columbus the first half of the year. A lot of times there'd be games where he would, you know, tinker with things or whatnot. And, you know, he always wants to win. But if it means, you know, if you have to sacrifice some games as you figure out what your best situation is, he was always willing to do that. The U.S., obviously people want to see them win because it's been a disappointing last few years. But Greg is looking at that big picture. And I think you saw that encapsulated in this last game against Panama. You know, they got these kids in there for several days. The big thing with him is he's so detail oriented with his tactics that, you know, there's that question of, does that work with the national team? And I think you get kids in there that are playing at a high level that can, you know, are used to being tactically driven by their managers. You got them in. The first game wasn't great. They held possession. They did some things well. But after a few days of training together, he was able to figure out what they did best, and they were able to execute his game plan. There were still issues. They gave up two goals that they probably shouldn't have, things like that. But I really think Greg's going to do a good job.
Absolutely.
That's not just, you know, because I covered him and know him personally. I just think, you know, he really gets this game. He obviously played for the national team, so he understands what it means and what it takes. And, you know, I think that he's one of the bright soccer minds in our country. There are other guys. Jesse Marsh would have been a good hire. Greg Vanney would have been a good hire. You know, there are several guys that could have taken over that job and probably would have been successful. You know, the biggest thing too is I think Greg's willing to play these young kids because he recognizes the ability that they have, which is going to be important going forward.
Break it up there, Murph. You're stuck.
Sorry, all I'm right. done.
Oh, Murph, someone shake it. That's all right.
I think we lost Murph. He's back to one.
Well, I'm very excited about the future, and I hate to be a Fairweather fan or, you know, just Joe fan, like, you know, only going off the last thing that I saw. But I think in this particular point, it means something because now we're seeing progress, which is great. We don't really have time to get to this, but a weird score, Ecuador 6 and Colombia 1 in an actual World Cup qualifier. So I don't know.
Was Falcao there? And if not,
I doubt it.
Why they didn't win by 10.
All right.
Simple problem to solve.
And then also before the podcast tonight, which, by the way, like and subscribe, leave good comments. We have
5 stars.
Fragile egos, 5 stars, spread the word around. And we'll meet again here after a Crew victory on Saturday. We'll get to our picks here in a moment. But Alex and I, well, mainly me, came up with a concept that I think is a winner. And that is the Micro World Cup. and Alex and I have agreed on the concept.
Yep.
It is because I'm tired of seeing little tiny Micronesian countries losing 32-0. We need to have a micro World Cup where every nation under a million population competes for the micro World Cup, and the winner of the micro World Cup gets to compete in the actual next World Cup. They don't have to qualify. So the host nation and the micro World Cup winner will compete in the World Cup. How is this not the greatest idea ever?
It's really, really good.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, try to make this happen with FIFA.
I would watch it. I would absolutely watch it.
Yeah, and nobody cares about, you know, Germany versus Italy in their, you know, fifth friendly in the last 2 years. Like, nobody cares.
They're not playing friendlies anymore.
It's like, you know, they're going to call up a bunch of losers and they're going to, you know, kick the ball around for a little bit and they're not playing for anything.
Who would not watch Liechtenstein against San Marcos in the final? Who would not watch that?
I don't even think San Marcos have a team. I don't even think they're a FIFA-affiliated nation.
Oh, well, I picked the wrong thing. Give me something else.
Liechtenstein against Djibouti.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Djibouti.
Or Fiji.
Fiji v. Liechtenstein in the final from the capital of Liechtenstein, which I believe starts with an A. And like 3,000 people live in Liechtenstein. They have really good skiers.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of countries. Like, I mean, imagine that you're seeing like Monaco against Vatican City in like a mini.
Hate to break it to you, Alex. Neither of them have teams.
You get the idea, though.
They'll get teams, yeah.
You get the idea, though. This is the most brilliant idea I've ever had. I'm so proud of myself.
What I have to say, though, is Iceland has a population of 368,000 people, and they've got a pretty good.
Yeah, team, they would actually be the favorites.
So they're going to be like the Brazil of this tournament every time.
That's okay.
It's right. But I mean, you've got Vanuatu against Malta, Cap Verde against Suriname, right? I mean,
Cap Verde is actually pretty good. They've been decent in Africa recently.
Yeah, I'm saying. I mean, you got Trinidad and Tobago. You'd have to.
All right, maybe we need to knock the population down a bit. So Iceland is what, 350,000?
Yeah.
They are good. I enjoyed watching them in the last Euro. I mean, they were legit.
They're not good anymore, but.
All right. Well, we'll work out the details. It's all fine, but it's a great idea. I love it. All right. Yeah. Let's make our picks and get out of here because we've gone way too long. I'm going to save Alex for last because his pick is always the weirdest. Murph, what do you got for us, Red Bulls and crew at Moffray Stadium this coming Saturday at 3?
As I mentioned earlier, I think the tactical battle in this one is going to be very interesting. I think it is every time these two teams play. And, so I think that's kind of what I'm excited about in this game. I think the crew at full strength are the better team, and I think that will be reflected. I do think the 2 weeks to prepare is a big deal. I'm going to say 2-1 crew. I think the crew will probably control the game, but I think Red Bulls just makes things ugly. And so, you know, I don't see a ton of goals in this one, but yeah, I'll go 2-1 crew.
All right.
Well, before I make my pick, I know Brian, you wanted to ask me something about the PS5 on the pod, so I want to remind you about that.
Yes,
that'll be the last thing. But first off, MLS bracket prediction: I am picking Portland to beat Toronto in the MLS Cup final. That's my prediction. I'm going bold, so I got Portland winning MLS's back and the MLS Cup. For the
Alex
game
like that.
That's what I was gonna pick too, Ori.
Yeah, and guess what? I'm also gonna pick 2-1 crew against the Red Bulls because whatever. But yeah, the reason behind that is Columbus has struggled to find a clean sheet recently. We'll see if defensively they sort of reset because they haven't been able to keep a clean sheet in, you know, very many games consecutively. But this is a reset team. Every time we've seen the crew come back from a reset period, they've come back very, very strong and have looked very, very good. They're fully healthy. They're amped up. They know that they can compete to win MLS Cup. And I think at home, they are nearly unbeatable. They know it's a fortress and they understand the stakes of being at home. I think they come away with the victory against the Red Bulls. And then they have to wait for Tuesday and see whether or not Toronto can hold down the fort in Connecticut against either, I think it would be either Montreal, New England, or Nashville they would play in that game.
Well, they don't have as much time to think about their opponent now, do they? That could be a factor. Alex?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a real shame because I really enjoyed working with Murph and Ori, and the fact that we're going to have to kick them both off of the podcast for pro-Portland blasphemy on the Massive Report. It's a real shame.
I could have Seattle. Would that have been?
We can't even understand what Murph is trying to
see. Seattle now partially owned by Ken Griffey Jr.
Really?
Murph decided to cut the cable in the middle of the podcast with his internet provider, and so now it's been downhill from here from him on the second half of the show. Going back to the match, I am predicting a strong performance from the Crew, and you know we're a man short today, right? So to fill in for Bart, I have to kind of really go out there with this pick. I'm going to go 4-0, and here's why. The Red Bulls have a lot of players who I am not convinced are real people. I think that they are somehow, there's been a glitch in the matrix and those kind of fake FIFA players that you get in career mode are actually on the roster. They've got a guy named Tom Barlow at striker who I don't think is a real person.
They've got a guy, I saw him score a goal the other day.
Yeah, he's not real. Sean Davis, also not a real person. That's another fake name. Drew Yearwood, not a real person. Parker, not a real person. These are all fake names. Aaron Long, not a real person. So half of their squad are not real people. So I think it's going to be an easy Crew victory. I never heard of him before. Never heard of him before, Murph. 4-0 Crew.
All right. Well, I'm going to tuck in between everyone. I'm going to say 2-0 Crew. And I'm going to say that ZZ Top combines in a goal 7 seconds in.
What?
To beat the record.
Oh, my God.
That we saw 5 years ago, 9 seconds in, did we not?
Bold. I like it.
Was it 9 or 12?
ZZ Top, it was 9 seconds.
Nine.
Wasn't it? Yeah, seven seconds.
Okay. I was at the game, so I should know.
Zellerel assisting Zardes. And then we add a goal in the 90th minute and win it 2-0. How about that? Take that. Oh, you want my MLS Cup pick?
A goal less. Crew. A goal less minute and a goal in the last minute?
Yep. That's goal the first few seconds and a goal in the last minute in stoppage time. And who scores it? Josh Williams.
real quick, I have Bart's prediction. Not to take away Alex's thunder. He said 3-1 Crew, Josh Williams, bicycle dagger.
And then after the Josh Williams bike, the great Jordan Angeli will say, get out of town.
I love it. I love it. The tattoo special. All right. And my MLS Cup pick, Crew beat Seattle. There you go.
Love it.
You heard it here first. All right. We got to get out of here. Real quick, you got 5 seconds to tell me, is the PS5 worth it in the context of FIFA?
No. Sorry. Not in the context of FIFA. FIFA Next Gen comes out December 4th. It's going to be a side grade more than an upgrade. The first full Next Gen FIFA will be FIFA 22 because, let's face it, they had to release the same game on two consoles. It's going to be a side grade. NBA was the same thing. So if you want a Next Gen console for FIFA, I would wait till FIFA 22. But I just got my PS5. I'm very excited. And I'll let you guys know how it plays.
All right. We'll let you get to it. We'll let you get to it. And I got to get my Sega Genesis going again. That's what I got to do. All right. Thank you so much for listening to the Massive Report podcast, our longest ever edition. But we had, as it turns out, a lot to go over. That's okay. I like hanging out with my buddies. We got Murph. We got Ari. We got Alex. Thank you. And Bart checking in from points unknown. And we'll be back next week to preview another Crew playoff game. Will we not? I will accept no other answers. So we'll see you next week. In the meantime, like and comment, and we thank you for listening to the Massive Report Podcast.